Lee Raymond, in any event, regarded state and the American government as a whole as not particularly helpful to ExxonMobil, notwithstanding the example of the administration's intervention to stop GAM's targeting of the corporation in Aceh. America's career diplomats did not understand international business very well, and some of them were outright hostile to large oil firms, Raymond believed. Where they did try to intervene in a commercial or contract matter, they often did not know enough detail to be constructive, and they did not appreciate the need for strict confidentiality, he concluded. Raymond could talk from time to time with his friend Vice President Cheney, who understood his issues in a sophisticated way. But the ExxonMobil chief executive had come to the view that as for the American foreign policy and government bureaucracy in general, the best approach was, as he told his colleagues, don't talk to them. That did not mean ExxonMobil never asked state for favors. It meant only that the corporation's demands for Bush administration intervention were erratic, inconsistent, and influenced by Raymond's access to back channels with Cheney and other officials he regarded as sophisticated and reliable, such as Samuel Bodman, who had become Secretary of Energy during President Bush's second term. ExxonMobil and its handful of international American peers blow hot and cold, the veteran American diplomat John Campbell wrote in one cable to Washington from West Africa. For the most part, they prefer to try to address industry-specific issues themselves. They may turn to the embassy, only to back away from requests on further consideration. If their efforts fail to achieve a resolution or problems become more acute, they can quickly return, demanding action. During the late 1990s, after Equatorial Guinea's big contracts were signed but before oil and cash flowed, Obiang traveled to Washington, D.C. for annual World Bank meetings. His country's decades-old struggles against poverty were about to end. He needed to think about how to manage the great sums that would soon come his way. Obiang was in some respects naive about global affairs, but it did not require an advanced degree in political science to notice that small, weak countries with huge amounts of oil tended, as Kuwait had done, to ally themselves protectively with the United States, a superpower with a thirst for hydrocarbons and a military large enough to deter any power that might bully its oil-supplying friends. By opening Equatorial Guinea's fields exclusively to American companies, Obiang hoped in time to coax Washington into strategic partnership, human rights violations or no. The president and his companions walked one afternoon past the grandiose main branch of Riggs Bank at 1503 Pennsylvania Avenue, across from the Treasury Building and diagonally opposite the White House. The bank's gray Ionic columns stood several stories tall and created the impression that this might be the American president's own financial institution, or, at a minimum, that it was deeply connected to the corridors of American power. "We should put our money here," Obiang told his companions, describing it later for an advisor. At the time, they still did not have much of a check to write. They opened a Riggs account with a $5,000 deposit. 2 years later, in 1997, with Zafiro in production, $1.2 million a month began to flow into the Washington, D.C. bank. Riggs's executives woke up to the gusher they had struck. Equatorial Guinea had gone from being a very small, insignificant relation to the largest single deposit relationship at Riggs. A manager named Ray Lund wrote to senior colleagues in 2001. With ExxonMobil now operating and profiting from Zafiro, Equatorial Guinea had $200 million on deposit and expected additional cash flow at a rate of about $20 million a month for the foreseeable future. Where is the money coming from? Oil, black gold, Texas tea. Obiang had been denied high-level meetings with Clinton administration officials. Equatorial Guinea's human rights performance, he was told, was the obstacle to such access. Africa Global, a small Washington lobbying firm, advised Obiang that the election of George W. Bush as President of the United States presented an opportunity to rehabilitate Equatorial Guinea's reputation and to establish a deeper partnership in Washington based on oil interests. Obiang agreed to pay Africa Global hundreds of thousands of dollars to help him navigate the American capital and secure meetings at the highest levels of the new administration. One of his lobbyists secured an appointment at the State Department's Africa Bureau on February 22, 2001, a few weeks after Bush's inaugural. Obiang has been waiting 8 years for the Democrats to leave office, said the dictator's representative. He hopes he can now meet with senior levels of the new administration. When a state cable about the lobbyists' meeting circulated in West Africa, the American ambassador in Cameroon wrote in to Washington to say that we would be delighted if he, Obiang, were received at a higher level, although it would be better if we, the American government, can get the credit instead of a lobbying firm. Henry Hand, a desk officer in the Africa Bureau at Foggy Bottom, took a call a few days later from a Halliburton executive. The executive said his company was being hounded by Africa Global to intercede with the vice president's office to obtain an audience with Cheney for Equatorial Guinea's president. They declined to do so, Hand reported. On March 2nd, the desk officer rode over to Equatorial Guinea's threadbare embassy on 16th Street. Obiang's ambassador to the United States explained to him that Africa Global has a very ambitious agenda for the leader's upcoming private trip to Washington. The lobbying firm would be seeking meetings with Bush, Cheney, Secretary of State Colin Powell, and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. As I left the embassy, oil company representatives were arriving for a meeting, having been convoked by the ambassador to advocate for Obiang's access, Hand reported. Nor was Africa Global confining itself to the federal government. The desk officer reported 2 weeks later that Obiang had apparently secured a meeting with Washington, D.C. Mayor Anthony Williams, who may declare March EG month. The main practical item on Obiang's agenda was the establishment of an American embassy in Malabo. But no meetings with Bush, Cheney, or Powell actually materialized in the days ahead. He is reportedly irked, Hand recorded. The energy companies are increasingly unhappy with Africa Global, which they feel is doing a poor job of getting across Equatorial Guinea's message. The lobbying firm has been very heavy-handed in leaning on these firms, ExxonMobil, Marathon, and Hess, in an attempt to get high-level meetings, after raising Obiang's expectations for such meetings to unrealistic levels.